Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here, you get fire, and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I am your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, I'm in Nashville, and our old friend, and still friend, obviously, Jeffrey Wright, kind enough to tape the podcast from his new digs in Memphis. So we're going to talk about a number of things. We'll get this up to you later. We'll have this to you on Wednesday. As we're doing this, just so you understand just how distracted we are, or I am, I'm keeping up with Tim Tebow's game today, the Red Sox and the Mets. That game, in the top of the second, Tim Tebow expected to get his shot at Rick Porcello today, and we'll talk about what a ridiculous circus act it is. I don't know why it bothers me, Jeffrey, but it does. Welcome into the show, Jeffrey. Good to have you back.
It's great to be back. It feels like home.
Speaking of home, I know your home away from home is the probably not as often as it used to be, but it's the Oxford Crystal. If you guys are coming into Oxford this weekend, Ole Miss baseball, they're playing
Furman, I think.
Yeah, Furman this weekend. So if you're coming in and are going in and out, stop at the Oxford Crystal out there on Highway 6 West, right next to the Oxford Exxon. You can fill up at the Oxford Exxon and then go fill up at the Oxford Crystal as well. They've got the happy hour if you just want a quick snack, 59-cent ices, 59-cent Oxford Crystals. And then they've got breakfast, lunch, dinner, all the pups, the Crystal Chicks, everything that we tell you about all the time. It's right there at the Oxford Crystal, open all day. Coming to you from, at least in this case, the very remote Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, clarkfordinc.com is the website. You can call that number, ask for Corey Clark, tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes. It's that simple. Or you can go to the website and you can request a quote via email. Most dealers won't give you an email quote. He will. It's just because it's that easy at Clark Ford in Amory. Great deals, right to the bottom line, no haggling. 662-257-1900, clarkfordinc.com. So this Tebow thing, I was telling you before we started, I'm almost mad at myself that it bothers me as much as it does, but it does bother me.
Yeah, it's because you're a liberal, flaming liberal sports writer.
I know I got accused of being the stereotypical liberal sports writer on Twitter the other day, and I went back and I said, all right, who have I voted for president?
Yeah, you did your voting record. That was unbelievable.
And I said, you know, the first time I could vote was 1988, and so that was an election year.
Mm-hmm.
George H.W. Bush against Michael Dukakis.
Okay, he's pretty liberal.
I voted for Bush.
Okay.
And then Bush ran against Bill Clinton, and I voted for Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Then Clinton ran against Bob Dole, and I half-heartedly voted for Bob Dole. It was I thought about voting for Clinton. I don't know why I didn't. Then,
in fairness, Bill Maher voted for Bob Dole, so you're not completely out of the woodwork.
In many ways, Bob Dole's an American hero. Whatever. I knew he wasn't going to win. I voted. It didn't matter. Anyway, I voted for George W. Bush over Al Gore.
Mm-hmm. You like Bush?
I do. I like mm-hmm. W. a lot. And I think history is showing that a lot of us should like W.
Mm-hmm.
I voted for W. against Kerry.
Yep.
I voted for McCain, even though I really didn't like him. Almost voted for Obama in that election. It was very close in my mind. And then I voted for Romney against Obama. And then this time I voted for Theo Epstein. Because Theo Epstein can fix anything, mm-hmm. and including a country. I'm glad Theo didn't win. He would have had to give up his day job. And so it all worked out. But that's hardly a liberal voting record. Yet this Tebow thing bugs the ever-living hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. I'll tell you why it is. I think it is because, oh man, I'm going to piss people off. I think it's because sometimes I think Tebow uses his faith, and I'm not questioning his faith.
Right.
But I think he uses his faith for his own purpose.
I mean, yeah, there's definitely like an Augustine or Augustine principle in which I've always kind of abided by. It's like, you know, when I think back on the guys that I would consider the greatest religious examples that I can think of. All right. One is Eli Morris in Memphis. I've never had to have Eli Morris preach his faith to me. Todd Erickson was my youth group minister all throughout high school. Never once heard Todd have to tell me. And by the way, these are all pretty big Jesus guys. And there was another guy at Pepperdine, Jerry Yates, same thing. And he wasn't a minister. He was the head of the business school. And so there's something about when it appears that you are using, I understand the whole notion, like, well, if you really believe it, you'll profess it. It's like, okay, well, that doesn't say you'll proclaim it. Like, you can Teddy Roosevelt it, you know, speak softly, carry a big stick. Like, there are ways to go about it. And I think it's the fact that it appears to be somewhat of a brand. I think that can kind of rub people the wrong way. My problem with Tebow is not so much that as, at this point, the amount of scrutiny that he's been under. If he really were fraudulent in nature, I think something would have come up by now. Yeah. However, the thing that bothers me is it's the same thing. It's like, it's honestly, I know. I hope everyone's sitting down for this. I'm going to make a wrestling analogy. But here it is.
Okay.
There's a move in wrestling when you're trying to get, there's a guy named Roman Reigns right now. The crowd hates him, but the WWE, particularly Vince McMahon, has decided this is his guy. He's rolling with him. It's his guy. He's got his mind made up. And no matter what the audience thinks, it's his way or the highway, and you're going to like it. And eventually, he thinks he'll get over. Well, he continues to get booed out of his mind every time they give him a moment where he's supposed to have his big moment. The only time that he's ever gotten marginally close to getting over or being popular or being accepted is when he defeats an undeserving champion. And so it's the same type principle where it's like Tebow is undeserving. Like if he did not have the name Tim Tebow, he would not be in this position. There is no general manager out there that would take a chance on I believe he was 29 when they took the chance on him. 29-year-old who hasn't played baseball in 11 years. There's 0% chance of. I don't care if he played professional football or not. Like, there's just no general manager that would do it. It certainly wouldn't give him $100,000. They may like say, all right, well, you can have a tryout in which they'll send, you know, they'll send the scouts intern to go and watch and humor him. But I think that's what bothers me more than anything. And by the way, I also understand that this is how the world works. If your name has juice, if you can offer something to a business, they'll hire you and they'll try to, you know, they'll try to get every single nickel that's out of you. But realistically, it sounds like at minimum he's got years of work to go. I mean, what's his ceiling? Like, it drives me insane because he just doesn't deserve to be there. That's what drives me insane.
What's the end game? By the way, they're going to the top of the third. It's 1-0 Mets. Tebow will lead off the bottom of the third. I'll be curious to see whether Porcello, because it's very early in spring.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see whether Porcello pitches to Tebow or not.
Any idea where he's at pitch count wise?
Yeah, I can find that. Let's see. Porcello said I could find it. I'll keep looking for it. He's thrown Porcello through two innings, gave up a hit, a run. It was earned. He walked one, struck out two. So he faced seven hitters. Imagine he's done for the day. I'll be surprised if he's not.
Is he good? I can never figure that out. Like, I know he had amazing numbers last year, but every time I watched him, I'm just like, this guy's like in the Cy Young race. Like I don't know if I was like catching him on a bad day, because obviously they ran into just an absolute buzzsaw with the Indians. I mean, the Indians were so hot throughout the first, what, I guess, 10 or 11, 12 games of the playoffs, and then they ran into the buzzsaw that was the Cubs with their pitching staff lined up. But Porcello has always kind of, like, confused me.
He's really good. I don't think he should have won the Cy Young last year, but he had the stuff to win the Cy Young Award. He's solid. Yeah, he could pitch for your team or mine any day he wanted to.
Well, right now, if you have an elbow attached, or if you have a UCL attached to your elbow, you could pitch for mine.
All right, so we're going to get back to Tebow in a minute. There is breaking NFL news. It's not shocking at all, but I do want to know what you think. Cowboys, according to Adam Schefter, Todd Archer, others, so there's lots of media sources. Screw it. Whoever had it, they had it.
It's probably somebody in Dallas had it first, and then Schefter said sources confirm.
Yeah, probably so. Dallas Morning News, I'm guessing, had it. Schefter has confirmed it regardless.
Thank God for Adam.
Yeah. Cowboys releasing Tony Romo tomorrow.
Okay.
So we're talking about Houston, Denver.
It sounds like Houston and Denver are, according to all reports, those are the two leading candidates. If I'm him, I'm going to Denver. It begs the question. All right, I pose this to you. To me, this came down to a question of, do you do right by Tony Romo or do you do right by the Cowboys? Because I'm still not convinced that the best decision for the Cowboys was to get rid of Tony Romo or to release. I'm saying outright release him. However, where do you fall? Because it's tough to be a better soldier than he was, considering how difficult of a situation he was placed upon, because that was probably a team capable of winning a Super Bowl.
He could not have been a better soldier.
And that begs the question. Are you responsible in that situation for doing right by him, or are you still indebted to do right by the franchise?
Well, you are indebted to do right by the franchise, but if the only organization willing to trade for him is the Washington Redskins, for example, I don't know that you do that.
Because
if you know he's going to go to the AFC, look, I'm sure they're hoping he goes to Denver. He goes to Denver. They're not hearing about him every day. They don't do all the Texas stuff. If he goes to the Texans, they hear about it, especially if he ends up being the missing piece.
Well, odds are also, and I'm sure, can't wait for all the state hate, the Cowboys have to play a first-place schedule. The odds are relatively strong that Dak will have not as good of a year as he did this year. The same thing happened to Cam Newton. Like, that's just the way it works. When you end up having this meteoric rise, like, inevitably, it's tough to play at that level continuously.
If we were playing the Ole Miss NCAA drinking game, you would have to drink right now because you said meteoric rise.
Ah.
But we're not, so that's okay. So
what is lack of institutional control?
If you're Romo, do you go to Denver or do you go to Houston? Now it's up to him. Tomorrow he's going to get to make his own decision.
I get the arguments for Houston. It's, you had the number one defense in all the league. Allegedly, J.J. Watt, God rest his soul. Speaking of other heroes, thank God for his work.
He's working out.
He's working out, and he's telling everybody about it. And you get him back. I get the argument. There's also something to be said for losing franchises. Like, Romo has, realistically, what's the max? 2 years left, probably? Maybe a third if you could reach it, but what are the odds of that?
Does it tell you something that no one wanted to trade for him or no one was willing to trade for him? Does it tell you something about his back?
No, what it tells me is you can't trade for that contract. The contract was so big that you couldn't. There's not enough. You'd have to give up too much to trade for him, and inevitably, what people were banking on is that no one would be willing to trade for it. So therefore, make your best pitch come when he ultimately gets released. I think there was a sense that no matter what, the Cowboys were inevitably going to do right by Romo and give him his outright release.
And I think that's the right thing to do. He was so good to that organization for so long. It's very similar to the Colts and Peyton Manning, not to the same degree.
But no, I agree.
In that ballpark where sometimes someone is so special that doing it the right way for the relationship that you'll have down the road, for just the doing it the right way, is meaningful. And I think that's the case with Romo.
I think so too. I think this would be my question. It's the same. It's the ultimate question I have when it comes to football roster management. What would Belichick have done?
Let's say it's Tom Brady. Let's play the game.
Yes.
But Tom Brady gets hurt.
Yep.
Last season. Okay. In the preseason, he gets hurt.
Yeah, instead of the suspension, he tore his ACL in that last drive of the preseason or whatever.
Hurts his back.
Okay.
Hurts his back. Let's do the exact same thing. Hurts his back and can't play. And Garoppolo comes in and has an MVP candidate sort of season.
Okay.
Leads the Patriots to a division title and into the playoffs. And it makes financial sense for the Patriots to go with Garoppolo and to let Tom Brady move along. I don't know what he would do. I feel like the issue with Brady would be the same as the one you just described with Romo. The contract would make it impossible to trade for. Yet I don't know that he would. I don't know that he would let him go. I think he would keep Tom Brady on his roster and let the two quarterbacks compete and figure it out.
Yeah, I think the one difference there is that the argument for Romo was for playoff time. So the argument to start playing Romo last year when he was healthy was, well, he's a veteran. No rookie's ever made a Super Bowl. That's the argument. However, Romo doesn't have a ton of playoff success, whatever you want to attribute to. If you want to attribute to his carelessness, if you want to attribute to he's never had good enough teams, whatever the reason is, he hasn't had a ton of success in the playoffs. I feel like with Brady, we know what we're getting with Brady, therefore it makes it a different animal. And I think Belichick, even if, let's say if Brady would have come back in the same time that Romo was healthy to play, I think Belichick was going to Brady. And then I think he would have tried to trade Garoppolo. Because that's the other thing. I'm still curious what the actual market is for Garoppolo. Because everyone, you know, the Patriots are asking, I think, for like a first rounder. But, I mean,
there are no quarterbacks in the league. I mean, yet it's such a gamble. I mean, you're right. The sample size is so small.
Six quarters. And I watched Jacoby Brissett win a game. Like,
yeah.
Against the Texans.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not saying the way that Garoppolo won the game is anything similar than what Brissett did. For God's sakes, Belichick was running the veer at one point. Like, that was what they were running with Brissett. So in no shape, form, or fashion am I saying that it's apples to apples. But the point being is I watched Matt Castle go 11-4. And teams were like, oh, God, I got to get Matt Castle. Well, Matt Castle essentially went 11-4 because he happened to be the quarterback of the team that Bill Belichick put together. And Belichick never asked him to do anything he couldn't. I just think that inevitably there's a reason why Garoppolo was drafted where he was drafted. I'm not mortgaging that much for a guy that I saw play six quarters. I hate this quarterback draft too, by the way.
There's not a good one in it. There's no answer. There's no guy that can come in and get under center and lead your team by the first half of the season. All these guys are going to need a year.
Laugh at me all you want. After Mahomes, I'm not sure that the only guy that, like, the ceiling of guys that I would take for sure before I would take Kelly, I think it ends with Mahomes. No one else in that draft, other than probably Mahomes, has Chad's arm.
oh, he's got the most arm talent in the draft. The concern with him is forget all the off-field crap.
No, it's moving.
It's the two knees.
Yeah. But I think Chad has a chance to be – like, I saw a mock draft the other day that had the Giants taking Mitch Trubisky, and I understand that it's getting close to the point where the Giants really do have to start thinking about the next quarterback, and I'm completely okay with that. But I'm not okay with Mitch Trubisky. Excuse me, Mitchell. I beg your pardon.
Well, as we transition to the Giants, they are clearly not thinking about the next quarterback right now.
No.
They're thinking in their minds that, hey, Dallas has to play a different schedule. Washington is still Washington. The Eagles are the Eagles. Our window is closing. Let's go get it. They add Brandon Marshall today. I guess the deal will be official later or whatever. But Brandon Marshall's going to do a breaking news. Tim Tebow strikes out.
What?
Rick Porcello struck out Tim Tebow on strikes.
You think the Red Sox left Porcello? Did they take him out right after?
He has now thrown 30 pitches. The 30th pitch was the one that struck Tebow out. He took it on strikes. I'll be curious to see whether they take him out. I would think Rick Porcello wanted to pitch to Tim Tebow.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but I want to know if they took him out immediately after the strikeout.
I'm watching on the game day thing on my app. Okay, you're a Giants fan. They go out and they add Brandon Marshall to go with Odell Beckham Jr., with Shepard, who I thought was really good last year. Eli still has some gas in the tank. Tank might not be full anymore, but there's still gas in the tank. What do you think? I mean, he's not a running back. He's not a left tackle.
No, I mean, this is, you know, when we always get back to what would Belichick do, inevitably, this is what it comes down to. Belichick, as it pertains to the offense, does one thing and one thing only first. He ensures that the guys that are in front of Tom Brady are going to protect Tom Brady. He knows full well he can go and get Julian Edelman. He can go and get Danny Amendola. He can go and get who's the kid from Georgia, the receiver that ended up kind of having kind of a nice Malcolm whatever.
Yeah, Malcolm Mitchell.
Mitchell. He understands that the way that the rules work in the NFL, you can't bump anyone after 5 yards. That makes it a lot easier to run routes. He understands that receivers are more replaceable. Offensive linemen are really difficult to find. The Giants have not fixed their biggest issue in my problem, which is they cannot block up front. They have a left tackle that they refuse to admit sucks, even though anyone with an eyeballs. Like, I'm not kidding you. The adjustment, when he was getting beat like a redhead stepchild, the adjustment that the Giants made from a coaching perspective was they asked when he was getting beat if he could get bull rushed. Like, just have him run over you, because if he got bull rushed, it would take a little bit longer for the defensive end to get to Eli so he could have a little bit more time to get the ball off. Like, they refuse to acknowledge that that's their problem. And while I can see, like, if you're kind of doing, like, fantasy roster building, I can understand why you make this move. You go, all right, we've got a big body to go opposite of Beckham. We really like our slot guy. This gives us three very different types of receivers, and that's going to put a lot of pressure. However, it doesn't matter if the reason why when the Giants get beat, they get beat because Eli's got pressure at his feet and he can't get rid of the ball. And then because Eli's Eli and he's never – Eli treats – while Brandon – or Eric Flowers may be the redheaded stepchild, Eli treats every single play as if it's a newborn child and that he refuses to ever give up on it. Like, every play is special to him. And so he's never just going to – eat it, take the sack, whatever, make the play. Like, he always thinks that eventually someone's going to get open and can make the play. And it just creates this awful reality of you get these horrific negative plays because they won't give up. And so what it all boils down to is, how did this fix the problem? And I don't think it did.
Yeah, I don't think it did either. I mean, you give him a toy, but you don't – and I know that the season doesn't start tomorrow. What do they have to do in the draft now? At some point, are they involved in this Adrian Peterson thing, or has that ship sailed?
God, I hope not. Like, I'm sorry. Like, why? Again, back to Belichick. unless you can get him at a discounted rate, which it appears the only team that's capable of doing that are the Patriots, why would you not just go get your running back from a late round in the draft? Because that's what everyone keeps doing, because a running back, I mean, unless you're getting Zeke Elliott, and I guess I like Dalvin a ton, but I'm not convinced Dalvin's Zeke good. What are you going to do? Like, to me, it's just, and then you start thinking, like, I always think you should treat the draft, especially the first round, you should treat the draft like a company would treat what assets to buy. You buy the assets that are the hardest to find and that are the most valuable. So, quarterback, left tackle, and usually game-changing pass rushers. Those are the guys that affect the game the most. There's a reason why Carolina let Josh Norman walk. They let him walk because he's a corner, and the same thing with Josh Norman. The reason why they got him in the fifth round and he turned into something for them, it's the same idea. It's like, well, we can just go find the next Josh Norman. Same thing with receivers. Like, everyone holds the idea of, you know, there's a lot of first round receivers. We can go find someone, or we can find someone in the second and third round. Like, we can find receivers to plug in place, but you can't find Laremy Tunsil. You can't find Coughlin. You can't find Stanley or Staley, whatever, the kid from Baltimore. You just can't. Like, you have to get those types of options. So when you're sitting at 23, I think you still got to look for a pass rusher. And I think this draft is deep enough in the pass rushing department that I think you can probably find something there. If not, I'm looking at offensive line help. But that means, of course, that Reese will reach for a linebacker, maybe reach for another safety.
What do you do if in the second round, or even the third round,
Mixon, take him.
Joe Mixon sitting there.
Take him.
Ran a 4.43 today, over 6 feet tall, 230 pounds-ish.
Take him.
Great broad jump. I'm with you. I take him. I've debated this. We debated it on the Oxford Exxon podcast today.
That's not like I don't care what he did. I know exactly what he did, but I also know what else is in that locker room. It's not full of choir boys. Like, it's just not. Like, that's the reality. If you think that, like, if you really do believe that, like, I've talked to guys that play in the NFL and they're like, dude, you can't even leave your wallet around with your teammates. That's the reality of it. So
I take him.
He's got first round talent. He has first round talent.
Do you, if there's no great answer, if you're a team like the Giants, do you think about reaching for him at the end of the first?
Yeah.
100%.
I'm with you. I mean, I've debated it amongst myself all morning. It's been a fascinating internal debate, and I've decided that if I'm a GM, I'm probably grabbing him.
And I'm sick of the Eli Apple. Like, oh, Eli turned out to be really good. He's fine. He's a third corner. Like, he's fine.
Eli Apple was fine. When people do the Eli Apple thing, it's not fair to Eli Apple. Eli Apple did was have his name called, walked up and took it.
100%.
I mean, he didn't do anything wrong.
But it also comes back to the same point. Like, I agree with you. This isn't about Eli Apple.
My point is Jerry Reese.
Yes, and Eli Apple did not do anything that genuinely affected the outcome of a game. Eric Flowers did a ton that affected the outcome of the game.
Yes.
And you had a chance to fix that. And you flat out didn't. And you can sit there and say, well, we didn't like what we saw. And it's like,
no.
Okay. That's why your franchise hasn't won a playoff game, since realistically you've been in charge of the roster. The two championships are more attributed to Ernie Accorsi than they are to you.
Yeah, too many people make the Eli Apple joke, and it's like, yeah, you're blaming the wrong guy. He didn't do anything. He didn't make the call. He didn't do it. I mean, he's not the guy that was in the war room saying, hey, do we take Laremy Tunsil or not? He had no role in that. But everybody that did have a role in that, if I'm Eli Manning, that's the Eli. If I'm Eli Manning, I'm pissed.
Well, it's –
I look at that and go, really?
What's even worse to me, they didn't even have that conversation. Like, they did not even sit there. There's no one that's how scared the rest of that room is. There was no one that raised his hand and said, listen, guys, I get it. This is an ugly look, and we're probably going to take a hit. I understand it's New York, and we're going to have to answer some questions. But who gives a shit?
Yeah, you're going to answer questions for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, I mean, we answer questions. For God's sakes, something else is going to happen that we're going to have to answer questions for. Who gives a shit?
Here's the deal. In New York, yeah, you're going to answer questions for a couple of days. But the Yankees are in the season. The Mets are in season. Matt Harvey's going to do something. Phil Jackson's a distraction. He's going to fire a coach. The Knicks just screwed the pooch. There's NHL. The Jets are over there across town. They're going to do something. Come on. You aren't going to take a beating for long.
Not only that, you probably, at the end of the day, you probably would have had someone that said, hey, this is the first move you can point to where Jerry Reese finally made a sound roster management decision in which he actually made the right move. He had the best available player. He took the best available player. It fixed a problem. But it's also an ego thing. There's no question in my mind, and people can tell me I'm insane, whatever. I know how these guys work. Drafting Laremy Tunsil was not about the weed. It was not about the text messages. Drafting Laremy Tunsil would have been an admission of being wrong about Eric Flowers. He has continuously dug in that Eric Flowers is going to be their guy, because that's his guy. And so by drafting Tunsil, then you would have had to admit all along that you were wrong.
Yeah, that's where you...
It's an ego thing.
Full circle, what would Bill Belichick have done? He would have drafted Laremy Tunsil.
Belichick's probably just pissed that he didn't really have anything to move up high enough to get him.
Yeah, oh, there's no question about it. And then, you know, if you're the Dolphins, didn't take a beating. It took a one-day beating. It was over.
Not only that, especially a team like the Dolphins that spent so much money in free agency the last 2 years because that's how they felt like that was how they were going to get better. They saved a bunch of money because Brandon Albert was one of the guys they spent a bunch of money on. They were able to release Brandon Albert, clear up about $16 million in cap room overall, and now they got their left tackle on a rookie deal.
Yeah. The Beer Garden is brought to you in part by Strategic Partners and Media. It's a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. It does work with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to local startups. They operate with the same basic principle for your company, regardless of its size. They find a way to tell a story about a client that captivates an audience that eventually does business with the client. SPM focuses first and foremost on developing and winning a unique strategy for their clients, whether that is through creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get any business through good or bad times. SPM always finds the right path forward. They mastered their craft in the rough and tough political advertising world. They bring to the table decades of advertising experience plus a unique perspective to advertising and a tireless work ethic rooted in their days of nonstop campaigns. To reach them, email Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, that's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. I know you've been watching a lot of Grizzlies lately. We're going to talk about the Grizzlies in a minute. Let's talk about the MVP race in the NBA. I'm going to surprise you here.
All right.
If I had a vote today, and I don't, but if I did, I don't think I'm voting for Russell Westbrook.
Why?
Because in the end, and it's not his fault, but in the end, his team's not winning enough.
I mean, we're going to have that same debate that every freaking show has. But to me, if you want the award to be most outstanding player, call it most outstanding player. Like, if that's what you want, that's what they call it in the NCAA tournament. It's the most outstanding player. But it's most valuable player. I don't understand how the most valuable player is not Russell Westbrook.
I'm not sure his team wins 10 games without him.
No, I mean, honestly, you could make the argument that this is a little bit of a transition, but to me, the best argument for LeBron, whenever you have to inevitably have the LeBron versus MJ debate,
yeah,
The day that LeBron left Cleveland, they became the number one pick. The day that MJ left the Bulls, they got beat in the Eastern Conference Finals. And Scottie Pippen nearly won the MVP. Like, to me, that's the LeBron argument. Now, the same thing, like, I feel like this is a little bit of a transition. All right, I feel like Durant's obviously not on either of those guys' levels, but we're seeing once Durant leaves and Westbrook's having to carry this team like he is, it's unbelievable. And I used to really hate Westbrook, and I've told you, like, maybe it's because of the way that Durant left and the way that all the things that you've read, and you can side with Westbrook because he gave Durant everything. He made every possible concession to keep Durant possible, and Durant still left. But
yeah, you watch him now, and you realize what a concession he made for the first 7 years of his career.
I mean, what he's doing right now, like, I hope, if you love basketball, watch and cherish what he does, because there's no way that you can keep this up for what, more than like 2 years, considering the amount of energy he has to exert, his body size, like, there's no way, right? I mean, what, he's 30, 31 right now? What is he, 31?
I don't think he's even 30 yet. Let's see. I think he's still late 20s.
I want to say he's 2 years older than me.
He's 28. He'll be 29 in November.
Okay, so no, he and I are exactly the same age and very, very similar. Again, Westbrook put up 58 in a loss, and I pulled a muscle sleeping. So
yeah, very similar.
Very, very much the exact same.
6'3", 187, born November 12th, 1988. So
I'm so close there.
I think right now I'm voting for Harden, because he's literally carrying his team. The other guy that if I had a vote that right now would be on my ballot, three people would be on my ballot. All right. Westbrook, Harden, and Kawhi Leonard.
See, I would listen. I would rank. I would vote for Kawhi before I voted for Harden.
Really? Because of his defense?
Defense, and a lot of what the Rockets are doing is just based upon, I mean, we've seen Mike D'Antoni do this before. Like, this isn't the first time he's done it. Now, it didn't work in New York, but again, nothing works in New York. And it didn't work in L.A. And again, by the way, how's it going in L.A. right now? Like, I just feel like more of that is system and their ability. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe another aspect of it is I think the Rockets will win their first-round series, whoever they play, whether it's the Grizzlies, whether it's Oklahoma City, whether it's Utah or the Clippers. Like, I think they're just going to win. But, I mean, whoever they're playing in the next round, I'm betting on that team.
We haven't talked about it since Durant got hurt. And I know they're saying he'll be back, and I'm sure he'll be back. I do question whether he'll be back 100%. Are they being the Warriors, are they fallible for the first time? It's just the first time you look at them and you go, you know what? I don't know.
Well, you and I discussed this the very first time, like December when I was on this. Like, I've gotten accused of, like, just being a hater. And don't get me wrong, I champion the fact that I don't love a lot of things, but I sure do hate a lot of things. And I was the foremost champion of Warriors hate. I am a trailblazer on hating the Warriors.
You are.
And I understand that, but the reason why I felt like they're fallible is that I just don't understand why everyone – I've never seen a team that is so good, that has such a track record, that is as casually dismissed as the Spurs are. Why is that? Like, this, I don't understand why this team, this specific team, is so casually dismissed. It blows my mind.
They just stay under the radar. They're hardly ever on television. I don't have an answer for that.
Like, it blows my mind. Like, and so I've always felt like the Spurs had a legitimate chance against the Warriors, because they do the one thing that is the Warriors' weakness. Number one, they guard you like hell on the perimeter. I mean, they just guard their nuts off on the perimeter. And then they got two post guys that are both great players. So at a certain point, okay, Draymond can guard one, but you don't have the rim protector. And it's a bad, I don't feel like that's a great matchup for them. I mean, I'll tell you this, if I'm Steph Curry, I pray that Kawhi guards Clay.
Well, and if I'm San Antonio, I put Kawhi on Clay. Clay's more dangerous than Steph.
Who are you putting on Steph? Because I don't want Tony Parker on Steph.
No, I don't. That's been their problem. It's been their problem in playoff series. You know, the Thunder.
Sure, last Thunder year, there's no Durant. Question.
They could put Kawhi on Durant, and then Russell Westbrook just smiled and said, "Okay." And you know, they had no one to guard Russell. It's part of the Spurs' problem is that the way that they're made up, they've got elite defensive players, but they don't have an elite defensive player who can guard a point guard unless you put Kawhi on him. And if you put Kawhi on him, who do you put Manu on Clay?
I mean, how many minutes does I feel like in aren't Manu's minutes down to like in the 20s pretty regularly, like low 20s?
I'm pulling up the Spurs right now. 49-13 going into tonight's game against Sacramento. So they're going to be a 50-win team tonight. Let's see.
Hell, they might be a 60-win team.
I'm just saying as of tonight, they'll be a 50-win team. Yeah, they'll win 60 games for sure. Won 8 in a row, 9 of their last 10. They're 22-6 at home, 27-7 on the road. They just do everything well. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Still have to play Tony Parker a lot because he's the one that facilitates their offense, and you have to hide him on defense, and that's the problem against a team like Golden State.
Well,
when the Thunder had Durant, is that you didn't have room to hide anybody. They would, you know, they hit him on Andre Roberson, and Andre Roberson lit him up.
I know it's an argument that the Grizzlies have, but I'm now realizing it. It's a flaw on most every team. Like, who has a backup point guard that they can trust? Like, realistically.
Golden State.
And that's it, right?
About it.
I mean, it all comes down to, it's all just kind of the same thing. It's all going to be matchup and then... You know, if you have to put Kawhi on Clay, do you, you know, is Steph gonna revert back to the Steph of last year or the year before, or is this version of Steph more of what he is? And last year was just an unbelievable season. Sometimes guys just have those kinds of seasons, and obviously Steph's still a fantastic player, but he's not the unstoppable force that he was. So as it pertains to Durant in general, I mean, in my opinion, Durant's been their best player. And now he's got a knee. All right, let's say he comes back. No one said he's going to come back at 100%. Basically, everyone's like, yeah, he'll come back for the playoffs. He'll be around 80%. Okay, well, how's he going to...
Kawhi Leonard can stop him at 80%.
Well, what's he going to do? Okay, so that throws off his jump shot. Like, that's just the timing's off. What jump shot's off. How's he going to slash? Part of his game that's been so good this year is, man, he's finally started going to the rack. Like, everyone's going, why have you never been this? Like, it's amazing. Well,
in fairness to him, he's never been able to do it because when he played with the Thunder.
There's no spacing like he has now.
Exactly. Teams did not. Number one, Adams is a paint clogger.
Yep.
In a good way.
Yeah.
And then two, Andre Roberson, for all of his ability on the defensive end, and he is special on that end. He's garbage offensively, and teams sagged off of him. And so the lane wasn't open. It's one of the reasons why, and I'm arguing against myself here, Russell Westbrook's numbers this year are so incredible. He's getting to the rack in traffic. I mean, he is driving in bumper-to-bumper traffic every possession.
To me, it's why the biggest reason why he's my MVP is he's got that team in the playoff race. And Steven Adams is a good piece. Other than that, I mean, they're trash. Like,
yeah,
maybe it'll take some.
And Oladipo and Cantor's good on one end. Roberson's good on one end. A couple of the kids are going to be good down the road. I mean, I do think Sabonis and Abrinas are going to be good NBA players, but they're rookies right now, and they look like rookies. You know, Doug McDermott is a shooter. He can't guard. Taj Gibson's a role player. They're just a team. It's Russ and a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
I mean, guys are good, but they're not good enough. The podcast also brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. As Jeffrey can attest, give Greg Jones a call and tell him what you want. He'll have it ready for you. You can go in, or you can do what I like to do, because I like to browse when it comes to meat markets, and they always have new stuff. It's fantastic. I got a bone-in ribeye the other night that was just spectacular. You can't get it anywhere else in Oxford. Meat that good, that choice, as you can at LB's. They've got chicken, pork, whole chickens, everything. They've got the lunch menu, their catering menu as well. All of the sausages that are fantastic. I love the chicken sausage. A lot of people are partial to the pork sausage. I would suggest go in and kind of get you a sampling of the sausages. Throw them on your grill and see which ones you like the best. And don't forget, when you go in, there on your left, the beer fridge, grab six of any kind that you like and just say, hey, Greg, I heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and you get that six-pack for $6. Can't beat that anywhere in Oxford. That's at LB, 662-259-2999. Podcast is also brought to you by Snooze Mattress Company, 2202 Jackson Avenue West in Oxford, 662-701-5880. Call Jacob Williams and the team there at Snooze today. Tell them what you're looking for. They've got all the name brands you know and love. Jameson, Tempur-Pedic. They've got hotel mattresses. They've got mattress protectors, pillows, linens, bed frames, free setup, free delivery, layaway options. You can call and request a quote. Just Jacob and the team there, they do a great job. You'll be thrilled and very happy with yourself that you took your business to Snooze. Again, 662-701-5880. GoSnooze.com. All right, you've been watching the Grizzlies a lot. And I'll be honest, a couple of weeks ago, I was like, man, I kind of like the Grizzlies. I think they can make noise. I think they're interesting. And to some degree, I still do. They've hit the wall a little bit, and most NBA teams, not named the Warriors and Spurs, do at some point. Even the Cavaliers had a period this year where they were not a good basketball team. That being said, what is Fizdale doing lately?
Well, first off, you can tell it's March, and you can tell you're covering knockout basketball because you dropped making some noise. And this is the time of the year that we all make some noise. I mean, it's a very difficult. Here's what's interesting: the Grizzlies before January 1st, they were 22-14, and remember that was largely for about 6 weeks without Mike Conley, or I guess a full month, 30 some odd days without Mike Conley. They weathered that storm, a storm that many, myself included, thought was probably not possible to really navigate and possibly put you in jeopardy of missing the playoffs. They navigate that storm, and they finish the calendar year at 22-14. They had a point margin of 0.9 of a point in the positive, so roughly 1 point per game. Since January 1st, they are 14-14. With the exact same point margin. So we spent all first part of the year talking about the Grizzlies and their ability to win these super clutch games and these games off back to back. So the second half, like, they're winning all these close games, and maybe, like, you know, eternal optimist will point, well, the Grizzlies always win games with a small point margin. That's just the way that they're built. They don't blow people out because they don't score enough to blow people out. All right, but they were winning low scoring. Like the Grizzlies, the way that the Grizzlies were winning during the first part of the season, you just scratched your head and just go, this is unbelievable. Yet if you were realistic, you had to think that, all right, well, these tend to even themselves out. And the question then becomes, the Grizzlies don't pass the eye test right now. But are they not passing the eye test because they're losing? Or are they not passing the eye test because when they win, they actually win pretty comfortably the second half of the season. And when they lose pretty badly. So it's like it's the spread offense. When it works, it looks great. When you get, you know, penetration up the middle,
phrasing,
it looks awful. So the question then becomes, is a change necessary? Because it's really tough to determine. I mean, when you look at them, you think, all right, you probably can't play Tony Allen and Chandler Parsons on the same team, because the last 15 games, their net efficiencies are the two worst. And whether it's David Fizdale's call or not, the Grizzlies have made it readily apparent that Chandler Parsons is not, his role is not changing. And this is his role, and they're...
That's their problem.
I mean, it's the problem, but it's also the double-edged sword. If they... Calkins had an exclusive with Chandler last week. And Chandler was very upfront and very honest, and all the physical metrics say that his knee is where it should be from a sports science perspective. Now, all of us with eyeballs go, how is that possible? You literally look like the Tin Man. Like, it looks like it hurts you to move. And then in the same answer, he's saying that, you know, he's having to deal with the soreness. He's having to deal with all this. So the risk and the gamble is that if you sit Parsons down, you're exactly where you would be no matter what. You don't really have a chance to go further than you ever would have. However, if you weather this storm and you can get to the middle of April and Parsons has regained form, anything remotely close to what he was last year in Dallas, that's your best chance, because that's a piece that opens up the floor and that's a piece that gives teams tons and tons of trouble. That's their gamble. Their gamble's saying that they believe, based upon their doctors, based upon the sports scientists, their gamble is that inevitably Parsons will be the difference maker. I find it hard to believe, but again, that's why they're paid to do it, and I'm paid to talk about it.
His non-girlfriend says he's healthy as...
Which one?
I can't remember which one said it. One of them came on and said he's healthy as F.
Is that Bella? Bold call here. Bella Thorne will not die of natural causes. I do feel bad for like a girl like Savannah Chrisley, because clearly what happened was, you know, he flew her in. By the way, we need to also talk about how savage of a move dating 19-year-olds is for him. He dates 19-year-olds and takes them out to public dinner. He's making the bill cheap. They're not going to drink.
That's true.
Like, that is so savage. And then, it's very obvious what happened to poor sweet Savannah. Savannah had a night of passionate lovemaking, and she thought that meant they were boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah.
That's just... And that's essentially, the best part is, that's what her dad was saying, like when the whole soundbite of Hohound and he's a douchebag, he's a Hohound. Like that's what he was saying. It's like, hey, that's not exactly, let's be real, you have two daughters. I don't feel like you want them dating NBA guys.
Her tweet from 24 hours ago, so many people lower their expectations because someone isn't capable of living up to them. Don't do it. Do not settle.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm just looking at her Twitter feed. See, I didn't realize that this was the Savannah that we were talking about. Now I'm fascinated by the whole story and understand why so many people were.
Well, the real reason people got fascinated is because he brings her, Savannah goes on like the PR tour and says that they're dating. And then the next night, Power Moves Only, he shows up with like the Barstool smoke show darling, Bella Thorne. And Bella was wearing, let's just say it was Mardi Gras. And she was celebrating Lent and God's creation by showing as much of it as humanly possible. Her friend that sat next
to game?
Yeah. Her friend that sat next to her legitimately was wearing lingerie. Like, lingerie. It was unbelievable. Like, it was... The best is... Here's the other thing with, like, Bella Thorne. Bella Thorne's that ultimate example of girls. She's the girl that other women hate. They hate her. And she's like the ultimate heel because everything she does drives them insane. And so I'm sitting up at the radio table and the media relations person that brings us stats, like all she can do is just like bitch and vent and talk about how unacceptable it is to show up like Bella Thorne did. And I'm just sitting there, I'm just like, she's just that girl. Like, that's the girl that will just drive other women insane.
If you're Chandler, which one of these do you pick? Bella or Savannah?
Why do I have to pick? I'm Chandler Parsons.
Yeah, that's true. Let's say you had to. Say the basketball gods came down and said, we'll cut you a deal. You got to pick one, and we'll get your shot to start falling again in time for the playoffs.
I think I'm going Chrisley. Dylan's a big Bella Thorne guy. Call me old fashioned, but I like my ladies with a bit more of feminine traits. And Bella Thorne, just I don't know, she's too skinny for me.
I'm looking at some of her.
Bella's got a jacked up face too. Her face isn't for me.
She did not need to lose all of the weight that she lost. No, earlier in her career, she looked better than she looks now.
I completely agree. It's the Emma Stone. It's my Emma Stone point. And I still love Emma Stone, but Emma Stone was significantly more attractive when she had more weight on her.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not even close.
It's not like Easy A Emma Stone is as good as it gets. Like, that's love Emma Stone. Cannot say enough good things about her. Shout out to Emma. She won the breakup. Sucks to suck, Andrew Garfield.
Savannah's a beautiful girl.
She needs to go back to the longer hair. The short hair is not working for her. And short hair, I'm not a short hair hater, but it works on girls with rounder faces. She doesn't have the face for it.
Yeah, she did look better with the longer hair. Yeah. No question about it. That might be why Chandler can't commit.
I think there are a lot of other reasons. We gave out six tickets. We gave out six tickets one day, and Jeff made some comment like, yeah, Chandler can bring all his girlfriends. And I said, yeah, this week.
Even in Memphis, huh?
Well, yeah, because he now has $94 million in Memphis.
Yeah, which is like having $150 million in L.A.
I'm not sure. I think he can buy FedEx. I'm not quite certain. Pretty sure that's what the exchange rate works.
Last thing, are you I know you love the tournament because of all the gambling and the brackets and such, but is it just me, or is college basketball completely steamless going into March?
Completely. I even made this statement the other day, and I stood by it because I was with a bunch of like college basketball fans. If I did not gamble, I could not watch college basketball. It's that bad. Like, it's
so bad.
Now, this is my problem, though. And I will not stand for this vitriolic hate speech against that classy group of young men of integrity in Spokane, Washington. The Gonzaga Bulldogs are such men of high moral character that I will not stand for any of this hate speech against them that keeps rendering upon them. Last night, up 18 points on the line, on the second half line.
Yeah.
45 seconds left. They were closing out. They were double teaming. They were trapping in the corners. They got a turnover. That's the kind of commitment and integrity that I look for in a basketball team. That game did not have strike triple zeros. They could have given up an easy basket. Guess what? They didn't.
You play to the final horn.
You play to the final horn, and you recognize, hey, there are a lot of good teams. There are a lot of good human beings out there that a lot of this matters a lot more to you or a lot more to them than it does to you. Carly yeah. would not have eaten last night had Gonzaga not done what they did.
I'm glad Carly ate because she's been through enough trauma.
Neil, they're 23-7-1 against the spread. Like, I don't think people realize, like, when everyone's like, well, fine, that means they cover. No, that's unbelievable. They exceed expectations virtually every single night.
Well, it means that they play to the buzzer.
They play to the buzzer, but also, here's the team that's going to beat them. The way that you beat Gonzaga is you do what BYU did. BYU, the first 10 minutes of the game last Saturday, they were trying to drive because that's what BYU loves to do. They love to drive and kick. Well, that plays exactly into their hands, and they got down like 20-2. Rose calls a timeout, and he goes, F it. Well, he's Mormon, so he said, gosh darn it, guys. Gee golly keepers. We're just going to stand around and shoot threes. That's what you do. You beat Gonzaga with jump shooting. So the teams that would give them trouble, if they ran into like Kansas, I think they'd be kind of screwed. Duke's probably a bad matchup for them because Duke doesn't really have much of an inside game this year, but they really can shoot it. Carolina can shoot it. I mean, this year there's not a ton of great jump shooting teams. Like, the team that would beat them is like Villanova of like 2009 through 2013. They just would stand on the perimeter and just barrage you with threes.
Well, you know, I literally, and it starts this week, I dread, and I think this is going to be the year I call some of them out on Twitter. I'll just piss them off. They'll never come on my podcast again, but I'll have fun with it. When they go, this is the greatest sport in the world, I'm just going to go, no, it's the 20th best sport in the world. Stop. It's not good right now. For whatever reason or group of reasons, it's not particularly good right now. The tournament's good because you all have a bracket.
Well, the tournament's good because it's the same reason why fighting is, there's drama and it's a knockout. It's win or go home. It's inherent drama. But let's be real. After the first weekend, when you get all the ridiculous finishes, and let's also be real. It's not like they're great games. They're close games that have unbelievable theatrics because it's win or go home. Like, that's the reason why it's amazing. And so it's lay it all on the line. And there's nothing that substitutes drama like that. Like, there's just no match for it. But when you get to that next weekend, the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, man, you get a lot of bad basketball games. And then you get them in the then you have them stupidly playing in these freaking 80,000 seat football stadiums, and they're not even like putting the floor on the end zone and cutting it off. They're literally putting the floor in the middle of the stadium, and it just there's no depth perception. Like, everyone shoots terribly. Like, it's tough to watch.
It is. Maybe we can talk about it as it winds down.
I will say, final thought though, it's not just, it's everyone that does. Like, it drives us insane because we realize it, but like the same thing happens in college football when you get a Saturday with a bunch of stupid endings because people can't play cover two and they let guys behind them, and then you get these ridiculous finishes. Like, college, it's the greatest sport ever. It's, you know, same thing with, you know, college basketball. You get this. And then, you know, the college baseball writers, it's just college amateurism at its purest form. It's like, they do it in every sport. I mean, you just kind of have to block it out. Like, the answer is no, it's not, and the TV ratings show it. It's a great tournament, but no, it's not.
Well, my man, I really appreciate it, as always. It's fun to catch up, and we'll do it again in a month or so. Catch up on, be time for... time for Major League Baseball. What, 3.5 weeks away till Cubs Cardinals open in St. Louis, which ought to be a lot of fun. So we'll catch up soon.
Appreciate it, my man.
That's Jeffrey Wright. I'm Neil McCready. That does it for the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. It'll be spring break, and we'll catch up a little bit on the Beer Garden. We'll talk some more NFL draft, NFL free agency, continue to talk some Major League Baseball and other sports as well. Thanks for your time. Talk to you later.